I would just say there's one misperception of our veterans, and that is they are somehow damaged goods. Although if we tell our veterans enough that this is what's wrong with them, then they actually start believing it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Dead Reckoning Radio. This episode we talked to Jessica from the Painted Buffalo Traveling Studio, where she talked a little bit about her time as a combat cameraman for the Marine Corps. Mostly we talked about her adventure since then, where she has converted an old school bus for her and her son to live in. That school is not only her home, but her studio and headquarters for her art projects, specifically the paint can project, where she gathers art supplies, packs them into an ammo can, and sends them to veterans so they can begin their journey with art and all the benefits that come with it. We hope you enjoy.
Hey, Jessica, how's it going?
Hey, how are you guys?
Doing good.
We're good. Good. We're glad everybody has some free time now to actually sit down and record some podcasts because people have been asking for them. So really glad to have you on. So we'll kind of start and we'll just have you explain a little bit about, you know, where you come from and your time in the military, and then we'll circle back to how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, cool. So I did 10 years in the United States Marine Corps. I was a combat cameraman. Originally, I started as a graphics Marine, and so illustration and, you know, graphic design, that kind of stuff. But to travel, I had to pick up a camera, so photo and video kind of merged into there. I grew up on Long Island, New York, and kind of all over the country. My mom was also in the military. She did 6 years in the Navy and 14 years in the Coast Guard. And the year she retired, I joined the Marine Corps. So it's just literally been my entire life that I've been a part of this amazing family.
Awesome.
Nice.
Did you do photography and graphic design and all that before the Marine Corps? Or is that like a niche job to get? Or were you recruited for it? Or how does that work?
When I joined, I had to submit a portfolio because it was part of an artist program. So it was actual, like, drawing, you know, sitting down with the pad. And then when I got to my first duty station, it was pretty much like, yeah, we don't really do that here. And that was out in Hawaii. And it was like, pretty much, here's Adobe Photoshop, figure out how to use it. And that's now your, you know, tool in the Marine Corps. And so I just had to learn how to be a graphic designer. And that's what I did.
Interesting. What kind of jobs was it like?
Yeah.
What's that?
What kind of job did you do? Like, what kinds of assignments did you have?
So, out in Hawaii, I worked at Camp Smith, which was, like, PACOM, which was all of the Pacific of the world. So, I spent a lot of time in Asia, a lot of time in Australia, kind of doing training exercises and training the Thai, Nepal. I went to Mongolia, Korea, Vietnam, Japan. Wow. I went throughout Australia and did, you know, exercises like Talisman Saber, those kinds of things, kind of just joint ally training, you know, so when everybody goes overseas, they, you know, can combat together.
Awesome.
That's wild. Yeah. Do you find like other militaries that you've worked with have similar programs to like our combat camera?
I don't think they have like specific MOS like we did, but they definitely had people out there with photos and everything, but most of the stuff was just what we documented and telling the Marine Corps side of the story. You also told, you know, the other side of the story and kind of how, you know, especially in the Marine Corps, you just think it's, you know, Marines are war fighters and they don't, you know, join other forces and stuff. And then, you know, here we come, you know, to all these foreign countries and using their land in non-lethal weapons training and learning how would they serve, you know, jungle warfare training. You know, I did a lot of that in Thailand. And, you know, it was, we show you how to use our guns. You show us how to kind of navigate the landscape and, you know, adapt and overcome that way. So it was very, you know, I scratch your back, you scratch mine kind of atmosphere.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I had a fun job.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, it sounds like it. And you said you did 10 years. So what rank did you get out as?
I got medically separated as a sergeant. So I did 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that leads to my next question and pretty much answers it too. So, and so now, like, fast forward, you are, where did you, I think they call it something different. Like, we call it ETS, but I think it's, what is it?
Yeah.
For the Marine Corps, it's a different acronym, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we just say transitioned or got out, but you know, I had an EAS of, in October. So I got down in October. I did terminal, like a lot of veterans do. And I left the Pentagon on a Friday. I went to art school on Monday and I did, you know, I got my, art degree.
Awesome. What exactly is your degree? Is it, not obviously not liberal arts, something more focused? Like,
yeah. So I originally went, for art education, but, after 2.5 years of doing art ed, I realized I really love my own children and nobody else's children. Art teacher wasn't for me. And so I switched over to sculpture and ceramics with a concentration in community art methods. And that's pretty much how the bus started, was taking some community art classes and how communities can use art, you know, as more of, you know, a therapy, or, you know, just getting, you know, into towns and murals and big projects like the Painted Buffalo.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Where did you go to school?
University of North Carolina in Greensboro.
Oh yeah. My father-in-law's from that area. So.
Oh really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all over North Carolina.
I was talking to Stan Lake today, and he said that he knew you guys, and we met at UNCG because we both went there.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
It's a small world.
It is. Last summer, he was in like this like small kind of private beach area. Sunset Beach is where we go to almost every summer with my wife's family. And we were there just after 4th of July. And then like the week we left, he ended up being there and taking all these pictures. And we just missed each other. And it's all met through Instagram and through Dead Reckoning and all that. So it's pretty cool.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, a lot of good things have come out of Instagram and a lot of connections and meeting a lot of people this way. So it's a vital tool that we've been using.
Yeah,
absolutely. Oh, for sure.
Well, I'm sure for you being so mobile, you gotta kind of leverage the internet for your business and kind of just lifestyle, I guess.
Yeah, I have to work on that because I kind of just like show up to a town and then I'm like, oh, is anybody here? And I forget that I need to pre-plan, or you know how we kind of like were trained as OPSEC and stuff, so I don't really tell anybody where I'm going, and then I show up and when nobody's available I'm like, darn it. Pre-plan this tour around the United States and kind of set dates and meeting with specific veteran artists and stuff.
That's cool. So where are you at currently?
Right now I'm close to Atlanta, Georgia. I've been here for a few months with my dogs, my cat, and my kid. And then starting in May, well, it depends with this whole coronavirus stuff, but in May when he finishes school, because he's in a regular school, then we'll start our travels.
Sweet.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. So is that your long-term plan for him then, is to homeschool? That's just out
I'm
of curiosity.
I'm working on it, but as you know, a lot of people know co-parenting is a little difficult. I'm divorced and dad's not on board with homeschooling, but he really, because of the community we're kind of in with bus and van lifers, all of those kids are pretty much homeschooled, and he really wants to be homeschooled, but we're having some co-parenting issues. It happens.
Well, I'm sure you guys will figure it out.
You gotta adult and do what's best for him, you know?
Exactly.
Oh, absolutely. And is that where you're originally from, is Atlanta, or that's just where you're at right now?
My mom is from Long Island.
And oh, you so said that. That's spent, right.
Yeah, a lot of time on Long Island. But I just happened to stumble upon this eco farm here that also has other buses and bus lifers that live here. And so we came for 2 weeks and I've been here almost 9 months.
Just never left.
So we haven't been able to leave. Because it's so awesome here, but we're working on it. You know, you don't go to bus life to sit still, you go to bus life to travel, so we're working on getting on the road soon.
Yeah.
So, do you have, like, a long-term plan for the bus life? Like, is this like what you're going to do for a long time or forever? And do you know like where you're going to travel?
Yeah, I always say when my son hits puberty, that's the end of bus life, because his bedroom is way too close to my bedroom. But
maybe just soundproof the bathroom.
We decide, well, the bathroom is right next to my bedroom also, because it's only 200 square feet.
Yeah.
But until we're just like, yeah, no, this isn't really for us, but for now, we're having a really fun time. You know, we can just start up our house and go on a weekend vacation, or, you know, for spring break is coming up and we have this, you know, big plan of all these places we're going to go. So that I think is really enticing, especially for a curious, learning little boy. You know, we're researching right now national parks, and different national parks have different, you know, things. He's really into dinosaurs and digging and looking for rocks and all that kind of stuff. So we've been pinpointing all of the, you know, places that will fit into what he's interested in right now.
Alberta, head up north. Yeah.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Right now our plan is to go, north and then head across, Wyoming and Utah, and then head over to Washington. Down Oregon, down to California, and kind of crisscross that way. So, you know.
Cool.
It's exciting.
The bus life is always the schoolie life. It's always been pretty appealing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's always been very appealing to me, and I've watched dozens and dozens of YouTube videos of just the guys starting from scratch and making it at home. But we're expecting our third pretty much any day now.
There's a lot of babies that are made in school buses. I know,
because
I follow them all.
Yeah, I'm sure. And
they can raise their babies in a bus life. I think anybody can.
That's kind of what I try to say, but my wife, she's pretty old-fashioned. She likes the brick-and-mortar house.
And the scariest part of it is getting, not rid of all your stuff, but kind of prioritizing what's important to you. And getting rid of the excess, as Americans, we kind of overcompensate with the best technology, the best, you know, the most amount of shoes, or, you know, the newest and greatest, whatever. But ultimately, when you pinpoint what's important to you, are all of those things matter? Not really. And when I built the bus, I just picked the top three things that I wanted. And that was important. And it was room for my art supplies to make my son safe and happy and healthy. And, a place where my dogs could be and I can make art. And so I put all of that and kind of built my house around those three things. So, I have a Zen garden on the dashboard of the bus. I have a full size bathtub, because taking baths and relaxing and just being in that mindful space was important. And then every nook and cranny in the bus has some kind of art supplies in it. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So I grew up pretty like all over the place. I come from a family of divorce, and we moved around a bunch. And then my dad was military, so we moved around. So it was pretty easy for me to detach from things. And so I think maybe that's why it's so appealing for me to go to that lifestyle. But my wife has lived in two places until she came with me into the military. Yeah. And so, that traditional mindset, it's hard for people to grasp that kind of lifestyle, unless maybe your childhood was kind of like that, or I guess maybe you were raised in just one place your whole life, and you're just ready to get out and go do and explore.
Right. It seems like, and that's the thing with this lifestyle, is most of us, the only thing we have in common is that we live in a bus.
Really?
The lifestyle or where we came from or how we grew up is all different, but,
that's cool.
You know, when you can come together and be like, oh, you live in a bus? I live in a bus. Oh, yeah, you don't think that's weird. And you kind of bond over that. And then you eventually realize that you have even more in common that you don't really, you know, talk about. It's the same like in the military, you know, these, you know, tons of personalities kind of come together and you have to learn to work together. And you've come from different backgrounds and being raised differently and some having manners and some not. But you all are a team, and you kind of work it out and figure it out to, you know, make the mission work.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Beyond MOSs and branches of service and all that stuff. You're gonna have way more stuff.
We can have that healthy rivalry, but at the end of the day, you know, a veteran is a veteran, and that's all that matters.
Are those, I don't want to call them necessarily a commune, but like the little eco friendly places that you call, is that pretty common where like you create communities of little hubs around the country?
There's a few places. It's more popular on the West Coast than the East Coast, just because the West Coast is a little bit more progressive per se, or more liberal.
Well, yeah, more open to that lifestyle, really.
But,
more outdoorsy and everything.
Yeah, but here we live on a 5-acre. It's called an eco farm, but there's a pig, one pig, 5 goats. We have 10 dogs. I have a cat, and there's a bunch of kids. and right now I have one bus next to me, one bus behind me that's being built, an RV in front of me that they live full time, and then an Airbnb that's a school bus that people can rent and kind of stay on the farm and either just do it for a weekend or they come to see if they think they could, you know, before you buy a bus and start building, whether or not it's really what you thought it would be to move into a
school bus. That's pretty cool.
Because it is a full lifestyle change.
Oh, yeah, completely.
Yeah. But most of the time, you know, like a lot of people were joking about the social distancing. And when you come into bus life or van life, we just naturally socially distance ourselves from the crazy. And, you know, you're out traveling most of the time by yourself or with your family that's in your bus. And so all of us are just joking like, oh, well, now everybody gets to figure out what bus life is like. It's social distancing and kind of breaking away from the massive groups of people.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool. I like it. Yeah, I know. I always joke, like, and I keep seeing the memes now, like, where people are saying, like, making jokes about the social distancing and how they've been doing it for, like, decades, but...
Yeah.
It's
similar in the military, you know, that social distancing, that's just, you know, naturally what you do.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you were talking about art supplies in the schoolie and how they're kind of all over the place, but you've since consolidated some into little packages. So let's talk about that a little bit because you have a really cool project going on.
Yeah, so I call it the Paint Can Project. It originated because when I went to art school and in the Marine Corps also, I carried ammo boxes with my art supplies in them just because they were everywhere and they were cheap. And, you know, as an art student, art supplies are really expensive, so I try to cut prices everywhere. So I carried my art supplies in ammo boxes. So when I started this initiative, I got a bunch of ammo boxes. I painted them green and put the paint can project on the side, and I've been slowly filling them up with art supplies to give out to veterans. Not veteran artists per se, but veterans who are interested in telling their story through art. And, you know, each box has a theme. So I have some that are filled with a kit to do acrylic pours. I have some that are filled with pens and paper and notebooks for someone that's more interested in writing their story versus painting it. And then there's some boxes filled with paint and pastels and that kind of stuff. And so each box is a theme on how you want to tell your story. And eventually I plan, each one has a little notebook that I'd like you to tell your story in, and then I'll keep them and eventually have an art gallery with all of these veterans telling their own stories in a show. So I'm working on, I have a lot of future goals with this, but ultimately it's for veterans to give them art supplies and tell their stories. I have a little tagline, saving lives with art supplies. And it's just really giving veterans another tool in the toolbox that's an alternative from drugs and alcohol and mental health medication and that kind of stuff, and kind of getting back to the holistic methods.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I know we talk about that a lot in terms of writing and stuff, but just creating in general, right, is like such a positive outlet. And like, obviously, it's not like a total alternative to modern medicine, but like you have to have those things. You can't just rely on one thing. You know, you got to have a whole bunch of tools in your toolbox.
Right. So. And if it doesn't work for you, that's fine. But you're like toolboxes, some tools work for a job and some don't. And, you know, in this moment, and that might not work for you, but when you need that tool, you know, or you're ready to use that tool, then it's there for you. You know, yeah. And I'm not saying art supplies only or making art is going to save your life, because that's not my case. I mean, I did the drugs and alcohol and did all of the things they tell you not to do, and it wasn't working out. But then I went to art school. I got a service dog who's really helped a lot, and, you know, just distanced myself from toxic personalities or people or things that were triggers to me. And and it's not just one thing. It's, you know, it's a lifestyle change, complete lifestyle change, you know, getting away from all the things that kind of trigger you in the daily life.
As far as for you, you said that you focused on ceramics and sculptures. Is that your favorite art form? Or you said that you like painting as well, or writing? Like, what really appeals to you, and what kind of attracts you to it?
That's the main thing that people ask. Well, what's your art medium? And I just like to say I'm a maker. When that's I wake great. Up, what do I want to make? And what am I feeling? And what can best help me get that out onto the material? So some days I'm painting. A lot of my work that I've been doing lately is painting other people's rigs and you know, watercolors and that kind of stuff. But, you know, right now I'm working on a series that's acrylic and oil-based painting, and it's kind of my version of the duality of comparing PTSD with Stockholm syndrome. That's just a, you know, so Stockholm syndrome is where you go through this trauma. Most of the time it's people who get kidnapped or, you know, that kind of stuff. And they either fall in love with their captor or have a bond with their captor. That's, you know, it's a surviving mechanism.
Yeah.
And for me as a Marine, you know, I always see these Marines. They're so just like blood, sweat, and tears, you know, Marine Corps, Marine Corps, Marine Corps. But a lot of them have really fucked up stories about what the Marine Corps did to them or people in the Marine Corps did to them. But they are so in love with the idea that they're just a Marine and that's the only thing that matters. And so I'm kind of working through, I've been writing and doodling and kind of figuring out what that means for me and why I love the Marine Corps so much and the trauma that I had been a part of. But I still love the Marine Corps, and why is that? And so I'm working through some pieces that way.
That's cool.
It's definitely a Marine Corps thing, too.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys get brainwashed more than anybody.
Yeah. Marines are, I try to say Marines are the military, but they're not really. They're kind of like the Coast Guard. We're kind of like off in our own little bubble.
You guys are all into it, that's for sure. Do you find yourself like kind of doing that where you focus on, I guess, one medium or one series of kind of at a time, and then you kind of fully envelop that idea and then move on
with it in my mental health. I have to come to terms with it and kind of process it and not get over it, but be like, okay, this happened. I, you know, was stuck in it. And now like, I can't let it take over my brain, and then I can work it out through artwork. But I have to process it and get it out of my head before I can, you know, tell that story. And that's what I'm doing now. I've spent the last few months, you know, literally social distancing in my bus away from, I have other people here on the farm, but I'm the only veteran. And some of the things that are going through my head, there's no fucking way you guys can relate. As much as you say, oh, I'm depressed too, It's different and it's hard to explain. And so I spend a lot of time by myself here on the farm, off in the woods or in my bus, and just processing, you know, my career and what happened to me.
Yeah. Mm. So as far as social distancing from everybody on the farm, have you actually talked to anybody about it at all? Or are you trying to kind of solely shoulder that on your own?
No, we've been pretty quarantined on the farm anyways, you know, so we all like interact, we have dinner you know, that kind of stuff, or go in between each other's buses. So, you know, they're socializing here at the farm, but there's no new people coming to the farm, and we don't really leave the farm except, you know, if we need groceries or something, but there's no going, you know, usually we'll, you know, have a weekly event going bowling or, you know, out in town or whatever, but we haven't done any of that.
I guess what I mean is
3 weeks or so.
I guess what I mean, like within that community, I imagine it's a pretty tight community. You guys get to know each other probably fairly well, fairly quickly. Like, do they know much about your past? Do you feel comfortable opening up with them? Or is it just something now that you're just kind of like, I had to kind of figure this out before I kind of express much of it?
Yeah. I mean, like everything, it depends on the person. You know, most people know that I was in the Marine Corps, and you know, like a lot of people, that kind of already has its telling, you know, things. Oh, she was in the Marine Corps. Okay. Like, I have all these preconceived notions on what that looks like. Or it's, she was in the Marine Corps, but I didn't know there was females in the Marines. Well, sorry, but for the last 100 years, there's been women in the Marine Corps, but okay. But let's educate you on that. But you know, as far as my trauma or my struggles with mental health or, you know, my struggles with drug addiction or, you know, that kind of stuff, those tend to come over time. But I've kind of lived through it and I've, you know, come to terms with a lot of it. So most of the time, even if they don't want to know, I just, you know, it comes up in conversation and I'm pretty easy on telling them my story.
Yeah. I'm sure everybody has kind of their story that kind of brought them to the school life and all that, school bus life, schooling.
Right. And that's one of the things, too, that I've been, you know, starting to collect other veterans that live in school buses or van life. And at these, you know, shows or whatever, we kind of stick together, you know, kind of thing. So, you know, because it comes with, you know, some different things. You know, most of us don't really like crowds of people. Most of us don't like strangers coming into our home, you know, without warning or whatever. And at tiny house festivals, that's exactly what happens. You go to these festivals, the community is invited to come and tour our houses and kind of get to know, you know, that we're not all weird people. You know, we're just normal people like you guys. And then a lot of people come that, you know, are interested in bus life. And so us veterans, you know, we talk about those triggers that, you know, really affect us. And if you're going to live in this lifestyle, not that you have to get over them, but you have to kind of navigate how to get through them. You know, whether it's, you know, a lot of us, you know, who travel full time, we park in Walmart parking lots to stay overnight, or we park, you know, at Crackle Barrel because those are places you're allowed to park overnight at. And that comes with, you know, flashlights in our windows or a lot of people who have roof decks, just random teenagers will just get on top of their bus because they don't realize that someone lives inside. And that's really scary when you have, you know, mental health triggers like a lot of veterans do. So, and that's a lot what we talk about at these festivals. You know, there's another bus and the dad is a Marine Raider and he is still active duty and he does, you know, his Raider thing. And so it's interesting to talk to him about, you know, triggers and things, you know, because his Marine Corps career is a lot different than mine. One, because I'm a woman, but also because we had two different MOSs. But just to hear, you know, things that bother me, bother him, and we talk it out, which is, you know, therapeutic in itself.
Oh, it's incredibly important. That kind of reminded me a question I wanted to ask earlier with you guys kind of living this kind of somewhat isolated life and with your project with the paint can. Are you relying on more people to find you? Or what methods have you done to reach out to other people other than maybe coming on like our podcast or these festivals? I imagine that's pretty hard to go find people.
The veteran artists, I've all reached out to them and said, hey, I'm also a veteran artist. I've got this bus thing going on, but, you know, I'm just looking for other veteran artists and just to talk with or whatever in that way. But veterans who are interested in the paint can project, they all, most of them, unless it's like I'm out in town and I'm talking about it or at these festivals, most of the time veterans will find me, or I'll do something like this and someone will hear what I'm talking about and then go tell their dad or their friend or their, you know,
yeah.
And that's how, you know, that networking bubble kind of expands. And so perfect. I'm reaching out for veterans, and then veterans are also contacting me and being like, I want to be a part of this thing. How do I, you know, what do I need to do? You know, or when are you coming to my town? And, you know, most of the time it'll be in these real obscure places, and I'll just add it to my route, you know, just because I, that's the whole point, is to go to where the veterans are. And, you know, and most of the time they're in these small towns that, you know, big cities like Atlanta, DC, New York, you know, San Diego are all big in veteran communities. But you have to remember that the majority of the military came from these poor rinkadink towns, you know, and that's where they go home to when they get out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where did the name Painted Buffalo come from?
I get that a lot. So I'm not really sure where my fascination with bison and buffaloes came, but in my research, I kind of compared the history of bison in the Americas on, you know, they were rampant and all over America, and they kind of were these infested species here in America, and now they're not extinct, but there's very few. I kind of relate it to veterans, you know, they use us and abuse us and then discard us. And that's kind of what they've done to this American hero, you know, the bison are kind of, you know, I know the bald eagle is our, like our mascot, but when you think of America, a lot of people think of the bison. And so, you know, I've kind of, related it, you know, these majestic, massive, bold creatures are calm and docile till you piss them off.
Yeah.
That's just about every veteran I've ever met, right?
No, that's a really good.
We're all doing teddy bears until we get mad.
And we didn't massacre bald eagles, so we can right. We can still use those, I guess.
Yeah, I guess bald eagles have their place in America too.
I like that a lot.
Actually, it's funny, like, if you get a chance in your travels, especially to do, like, tours in D.C., something I didn't know when my wife and I toured the Capitol this summer was that on Liberty's Head, like, that weird-looking, like, rooster, crazy, like, chicken thing that's on Liberty's Head, is because it was, like, a French dude, and he'd never seen a bald eagle.
Huh.
That was like commissioned to design it. He didn't know what a bald eagle looked like, and it was before Google, so you can't really reference things like at the, you know, off the hip. So he just kind of like he read some stuff, I guess, and that's what he thought an eagle. So that crazy headdress on top of Liberty, on top of the Capitol, that's what his
vision for it, right?
Yeah.
I went to Italy last summer and did a study abroad trip through school. And I spent a month and a half kind of wandering Italy. And I went to this like crazy obscure taxidermy museum, and they had taxidermy of all these really awesome animals. But back then, the taxidermies never saw the animals like out in the wild. So they were all like miscontorted and weird. And you're like, oh, that's supposed to be a hippo, but the taxidermist has never seen a hippo. You know, it was really bizarre. And I never thought that that was part of it, but it most definitely is. You know,
you take
for granted all of the wealth of knowledge that is like instantly at your fingertips, and you forget, you know, that wasn't always.
It's true. And I think, like, we really do. We take it for granted. And yeah. I think sometimes we abuse it. My mm-hmm. son made this, like, drew this really cool picture. And I was like, man, like, this is great. But I noticed, like, the lines were very clean and stuff. And I was like, how did you do this? And he was like, oh, I put it on top of the iPad. And I was like, I was like, all right, well, like, it looks really good, but, like, now that I know that's a thing for him, I make sure that when he's actually creating his own stuff, that he doesn't have the iPad. And he wanted to look something up on my phone, like, the other day just to reference it, and I was like, no, yeah. man, just do it. It's important to sometimes just do it from memory and not use a reference and stuff.
But if you look at every tattoo artist out there, what do they use?
Oh, for sure.
White boxes and clear paper. Yep. I mean, muralist, that's what we do. You know, you trace things out, but the best stuff is all, you know.
Yeah. Or even just books, like take out a right. book. I was like, you don't need yeah. the iPad, you know? So,
yep.
yeah, it was interesting. I was thinking about that a bunch.
Here. I have a 9-year-old son that's obsessed yep. with Minecraft and YouTube. And, you know, I got to say, hey, get out of the bus, go outside, get some fresh yeah. air every once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah. I try to like make it with stuff like that. I know that it's really important for like us as parents to not just discount all of that. Totally. Like you have to engage with like what they're interested in, even yeah. if I think it's super dumb. Yeah. And I can't get into it at all. Like, I know that I have to like put in that time to, and I've been like super guilty in the past of not doing that just because I'm like,
and that's
like,
what they'll remember. They don't remember yeah. what you did or, you know, how much you were there, but it, when you were there, were you invested in the conversation or
yeah.
interested in, I mean, like I have two kids, I have a 12-year-old daughter and a 9-year-old son, and you know, some of the things they're into, like, say, Minecraft. I could give two shits about Minecraft, but it's mm-hmm. important to my kid, and he really loves it. And it, you know, the creativity that has come out of Minecraft, and paragraphs pop up real quick and disappear real quick. So he had to learn how to read them very fast. So he's a great reader. You know, there are benefits to that, but
yep.
you have to do the outside play and the inside play equally. You know,
oh, for
to
sure.
get a well-rounded grown-up, because they're not going to be 9 and 12 forever. They're going to be, you know, people out in society, and I want to put out good people back into society.
yeah.
You know?
I know. We're
video games
professional hard, facilitators.
Yeah. yeah. They definitely have their place. It helps with problem-solving skills and all that. Like yeah. you said, the creativity. They can possibly build a world from scratch on stuff like that. So
yeah.
it's pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. I've never seen like a the kid was probably 9 years old. We went over to a friend's house and he was playing it. And I was a big gamer growing up, and I got sucked
yeah.
into it. And I was like, "This is awesome!"
but yeah,
it is
so
cool.
Fun.
It's impressive.
Yeah. But
I
could see
like,
how
video
it,
games that I played when I was a kid, and he wasn't interested.
But
I was trying to relate to him.
yeah.
But, he
but it, but like you said, it's all kind of about that balance, because
yeah.
I know how I was as a kid. I would have been sucked into it all night, and I wouldn't sleep. I wouldn't do mm. anything like that, because I did that with just Xbox Live for Call of Duty and
yeah,
create like Skyrim was probably like the last game I was ever really into. I was into
yeah.
high school, right when I got in the Army kind of time frame, but
when you're smoking yeah. a lot of weed,
yeah,
yeah.
Well, yeah, that was
that's
back
the
in
thing
the day.
I never really got about veterans, especially you know, like my ex husband or. You know, veterans or Marines that I hung around, I'm like, you guys, you do this in real life. Why do you give a shit about Call of Duty? You guys do this. Like,
yeah.
they're like, yeah, but I'm learning this and I'm doing tech and I can do things that are not a part of Geneva Convention and all.
you
guys
torture
to
people,
go outside.
yeah. Oh, man. I know some people get real wrapped up, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. So, I mean, you talked a little bit about being a veteran in a schoolie. Like, what do you think that looks like for other people? Like, because there is like a growing community of like, you know, van dwelling veterans.
Yeah.
Like, it's still very small. Like, as anything, like, you know, if I scratch my nose a certain way, somebody on the planet is doing it the same way at the same moment,
mm-hmm.
maybe. But like, it's, you know, What do you think that looks like for other people? Do you think it's like very similar, or and do you think their motivations are the same?
Yeah, so I read something recently that says 1 million Americans live in 500 square feet or less. So that is a, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of people that live bus or van or tiny house living, but that is a lot of people. 1 million people in the United States, that's a huge thing. And I think what's so appealing for veterans is, you know, we get addicted to the adrenaline. We get addicted to, you know, we joke about like the 3-year itch, you know, like after 3 years at a duty station or 2.5 years at a duty station, you're just like, I'm ready to for something else. I'm ready to learn something new or go somewhere else. And that's what's really appealing about, you know, this lifestyle is when I'm ready to just find a different view or deal with different people or I'm over it, or I just want to kind of hermit. I mean, I live in a pretty obscure way and it just is naturally that. And a lot of people like me, like I did bus life one to reconnect with my family. I mean, out of my 10 years of service, that was my entire kids' lives I spent as a Marine, and I was a single mom. And so majority of the time they were off with babysitters or, you know, because I was dual active duty. My ex-husband was also a Marine. So it was my way of reconnecting and getting rid of all the crap and just focusing on the relationship of a mama and her babies. But also with the mental health stuff, just getting rid of the extra crap and the stressors and everything and starting fresh and figuring out who I was as an individual now that I'm not in the military, where the military was very, you know, you're not one person, you're a team. And now when you're out in the civilian world, it's like, you know, it's man eat man world, you know, who can step on who to get ahead. And you're kind of figuring out how to kind of transition that way. So that's why I think this world is so appealing, is because you can disconnect from everything you know and kind of rebuild yourself into who you want to become.
So you think it could be like a segue into something else, like for a lot of people?
Absolutely. I was talking to another veteran who's actually in Afghanistan right now, and he's like, man, when I get home, I'm gonna buy an RV and I'm just gonna, I'm like, bro, one, you're in the Army for another 6 years and you live in bumblefuck nowhere Ohio, like, what are you going to do? You know? And he's like, no, but we need, like, this is so, like, this is what I need as a veteran and blah, blah, this whole thing. And I was like, man, that would be so sick, you know, make a bus life community or a bus building company, you know, specifically for veterans. But, you know, I think it would be really awesome. That's something to kind of think about. You know, a lot is making the news of these tiny house villages and homeless veterans, and you know a lot of us can't afford these, you know, single family apartments or houses by ourselves when you get out, because your pay cut is, you know, a lot, you know, it's not a lot, but it is a lot when you're in the military, to zero, and then what do I do,
you know? It would encourage planning too, right? Like, right. I mean, you had to obviously plan out your build. You had to plan out like a budget for like how much, you know, as even travel, like,
exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Gas costs money.
One of
so
the thing I didn't realize was, yes, it costs a lot up front to build, but how much does it cost to travel all the time? And I mean, I have a diesel, 1997 Bluebird school bus. It's 35 feet long. It's 40 feet is the biggest. So I have a pretty large bus and it costs me about $100 to fill up. And that gets me, I don't know, probably 450 miles. But if you're driving that in a day, so that's $100 every single day. If you're going to be one of those travel around the country every day kind of buses, you know, so that's $100 every day. So that's $3,000 right there, you know? Like, and nobody is making $3,000, no bus lifer, you know, if you're, you know, and I also say the only way I can do this lifestyle is because I'm disabled and get a VA compensation, you know? But if I didn't have that, I wouldn't be able to maintain this lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is good. It's good that you're able to, you know, have that opportunity to take that time and yeah. you know, well, work on yourself and your family and stuff. So
I think the paint cans will be a really good way to, for you to kind of get out there and explore and travel kind of on the dime of that project.
Yeah, yeah, so exactly. And that was the thing is I get a lot of veterans. I want to do that too. How do I do that? And I say, number one question, are you going to get a VA disability check? Yes. Okay. What's your disability percentage? Okay. So that means you're making this amount of money. So to live the life I live, you have to make sure your life fits in whatever that amount of money is. And mm-hmm. and there's no, you know, I'm not, I don't have credit cards. I don't debt. I don't have, you know, I don't have a car now. I sold my car, you know, just because I'm driving my bus. Why am I going to have a car, you know,
right.
kind of thing. You got to, you know, live within your means. And that's one of the hardest things. You know, they don't really teach you, you know, financial management and budgeting in the military.
Military
stuff.
Or
in school.
Or in school.
So, you know, that's one of the hard things is people have to realize that, you know, if they don't want to get a second job, like me, I made it a point. I have to live within my means and take care of my children first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I need to do. And my goal was to not have a second job, you know, a second job, meaning, you know, 9 to 5 or, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. I sell my work and I, you know, here and there, I'll make a few bucks, you know, working on some graphic design, website building, that kind of stuff. But most of, and that's just play money, you know, but I have to live within my means, you know, to live this lifestyle.
Great.
That's awesome. So with the painted can project, if people want to send you stuff for that, where can they send it? Is that going to change soon? Or like, do you have some kind of distribution point set up where everybody can always send stuff?
I do have a P.O. box, and it's in Greensboro, North Carolina, where I went to school. That's kind of has been my hub. But until, I don't know, June 1st, this here on the farm is my address, and anybody can send something here.
Okay.
I do have an Amazon wish list that is labeled the Paint Can Project. And like I said earlier, I'm trying to build 25 ammo boxes. You don't have to buy 25 of something. If you can only buy $5 set of paints, that's incredible. And that's amazing. You know what I mean? Like cut out one Starbucks coffee for the week and you can buy a veteran, you know, a pack of paint to kind of get their journey started. So mm-hmm. I've set up a Amazon wish list because not a lot of people are artists or don't know what they, you know, so I put together, you know, all different types of price ranges from $1 to $100 of materials. And, you know, if you send it on Amazon, it'll send it straight to us and, you know, we'll put it in a box and thank you. If you want it anonymous, which some people did want their stuff anonymous, I can do that. But of course I want to throw your name out there and be like, thank you, thank you, thank you. Because without the listeners or, you know, people that follow me on Instagram, I wouldn't, you know, I can't afford to buy 25 ammo boxes worth of art supplies, but you know, if we kind of join together and do this together, we can really help a lot of people.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. We're going to put all the contact info and
cool.
and even the address where people can send stuff into the podcast notes. So do you have anything you want to plug or say before we bust out of here?
No, I just, you know, I want to thank you both for really, you know, giving me a soapbox to stand on and kind of tell my story and tell the bus story. And, you know, I really appreciate what you guys are doing. I get your tag, you know, in all these writing prompts and I really want to start doing that. I just have so much going on, but I'm working towards it. I, you know, I want to sit down and write more and I think
they're not going anywhere.
That's one of the things that's really helping the veteran community is just giving prompts, you know, because when you have to think of it yourself, same as like your son, you know, if you have to think of it yourself, you might not do it. But if you get a prompt, you know, it'll give you that one step closer to, you know, have an idea. So that's really awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on. Honestly, you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so glad
you're doing an awesome thing. It's really cool and inspiring.
All right. Well, yeah, we'll put all your contact info and stuff into the podcast notes. So if anybody wants to get in touch with you or donate to the Amazon wish list or anything like that for the Paint Camp project, they can do that. So
perfect. But, thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right. Talk to you soon. All right.
Take care.
Bye.
I think the biggest misperception is that somehow we're damning. That nothing really can stop us.